Coming to you from the center of the Miami creative arts scene, I'm Alette Simmons-Jimenez, and this is Art & Company. Thank you for joining me in my studio for conversations with some of the very interesting people who drive and support the arts that shape our community. If you like what you hear, please let us know by going over to iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and giving us some stars, maybe even a review. It's just amazing that you're the ones that can connect us to the rest of the world. We're listening to episode 5 today, and I've got some very interesting guests lined up. A little while back, I got a great scoop that there's a new project going up on Miami Beach that's going to have a lot of art inside. I really wanted to know more about it, so I contacted the people I just happened to know from iCrave in New York. That's the design firm in charge of the concept behind it all. We're going to hear from two of their designers that just happened to be in town. They put aside some of their time to stop by the studio before they headed out for the airport and back to work in New York. We have Mariela Alvarez, a senior project manager, and Jesse McDougall, director of strategy and brand development. And so, here's what they had to say. So we're here with Mariela and Jesse, and Mariela Alvarez and Jesse
McDougall.
Yeah, we didn't know how to pronounce it. Okay, and you both are from iCrave in New York, which is a design firm. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And they have a great new project going on near the beach, near the Bass Museum, that I know everybody in Miami and the art community is going to want to know about because it's an art hotel, right? So. Mm-hmm. The first thing I want to know is a little bit about you guys and iCrave. Unfortunately, Lionel can't be here. I thought he was going to be able to tell me all the history and the background of iCrave, but you guys can tell it all. So tell me how iCrave got started. He's the one that started and built the whole thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. So how did it start?
Lionel founded the company 15 years ago, and we were really a nightclub company. We were nightclub designers.
Okay.
He got his start. We got the first few projects were some really theatrical interior design projects for nightclubs, and that's kind of been what our style as a company has definitely evolved. I would say we're kind of styleless, but
how did he get into that?
Hanging out, friends. Yeah, having friends that are nightclub owners.
And he was a designer. He was an architect, and he hung out with certain people, and then got gravitated towards that. That's how things happen.
Yeah.
So anyway, that happened with him, and
that was in 2000.
In 2002, that's actually when I met him when he founded the company, and I was young. I was like a 22-year-old kid who liked to go out, and so we kind of crossed paths and. I would moonlight. I had a job, but I would moonlight at his office designing furniture from 7 o'clock till 10 o'clock after my day job.
Oh, wow. What was your day job?
I was the sort of head designer for store planning for David Yurman, a jewelry company.
Oh, yeah. Know him.
Lionel was just starting out. He couldn't really afford to pay me what I wanted to get paid. So I was like, oh, I'll just come in, after work, because it was really kind of easy, once you design one store, you just keep designing this same store.
Oh, yeah, they have a standard.
Yeah, we establish a standard.
Switch it up, different things.
So I would come in, and those guys were a bunch of, kooks, and there was about 7 people, and they would design nightclubs, and then go out. So they started to work. They would start to work at, noon, because they went out the night before, and I'd come in at 7. They'd be hitting their sort of midday thing, and then they would all be getting ready to go to clubs at midnight. It was crazy.
And back then it was more of a design build company than anything else. I think now we're just much more sophisticated in how we do everything.
Just to give you the full history thing, because I do this all the time.
I think it's interesting.
We went from theatrical New York nightclub interiors to restaurants. It was a natural kind of progression of that. And then restaurants naturally move into hotels and hospitality. And then what ended up happening in 2008, so maybe, 6, 7 years in, they got their first, we got our first airport project. And so
that's right.
Moving that hospitality mindset, that sort of food, beverage, entertainment, you know, mindset into an airport was a real
challenge, like, right?
Challenge. Yeah. And it was a great kind of experiment and started to inform the way we approach projects.
What are some of the airports you've done?
I think the first one was LaGuardia, right? Delta?
So the first one was JetBlue's new terminal.
Right.
At JFK T5. Right. And then we did LaGuardia terminals, Minneapolis. We did some stuff in Atlanta, Toronto. We did stuff in Philadelphia. And it was all about sort of how you transform the gate holds into more creative spaces
right.
that people can actually, like, order food from their seats and
the
stuff
whole,
like that.
Yeah, right. Not just a counter that you pay in a line.
Well, not just a cattle call. Not just
right.
like sort of a lineup of, like, chairs. There's, like, actually at the gates, there's bars and restaurants now.
Oh, nice. I mean, it's kind of incredible. How many people are there now?
About 40.
40?
You know,
yeah.
30 to 40 is what our cruising altitude is, or is what our sort of capacity is
but
for
that's
the office.
That's a lot of work for 30, 40 people, no?
They're
not all designers, right?
Most of us are.
It's a challenge. The sort of next leap for most design firms like ours are you have to kind of get up to 100 people, so you need to have the business to support 100 people. There's not a lot of design firms that are 70 people, so
yeah.
the project types don't line up. So we are sort of at the like hilt, and often, and it's hard, you know, the challenge is often bandwidth, how many projects are in right now.
Right.
And then if projects get put on hold, you sort of like are catching up
right.
later on in the
yeah.
year, and everything piles on top of itself.
Right. Yeah, it's not a real, it's not a you know, stable series of income.
Right.
It kind of ups and downs and ups, and you got to be able to handle it.
So I guess after the airports, we started doing the healthcare
mm-hmm.
projects. And that's kind of when I started. It was right before
mm-hmm.
we started doing those. And that kind of like also moved into the strategy and branding
right.
component.
Right. Oh, so you do... For different companies, you do their branding strategy
yeah.
now, too?
And actually, it's a good, if you're talking about creativity, right? As an architecture and interior design firm, we were giving away a lot of strategy in a phase called concept design. We were actually helping our clients
right.
solve their business problems
right.
So that we could then design the space. And we realized, oh, and, you know, we should be charging for this.
Right.
You know?
This is a job.
And then actually, like, Memorial Sloan Kettering is the first cancer care group that we sort of did our first healthcare project. And they asked us for strategy.
Yeah.
They called us for strategy.
Oh.
Thinking we were, like, an IDO or something. And then it sort of turned into it. The conversation went on, and they were like, okay, you also need to redo our, like, what our environments
spaces.
Are
yeah.
like.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Mariela, what is your... title and what do you do every day?
Yeah, so I started as a junior designer of almost 6 years ago. Now I'm a senior project manager, and I work in the branding and strategy studio within the company. There's three. There's the design and build, which focuses more on completing projects from a construction standpoint. There's a studio that leads most of the healthcare and travel, and those are the teams that do most of the hotels and that kind of stuff. And I work a lot on developing concepts from the ground up and do the whole branding meets what's the space design, what's the interior design, and all that stuff. So it's more of an holistic...
Orchestrating,
and it's
everything.
More of a holistic approach to designing the projects.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how did you get there? Give me your background, what led you
sure.
in the door there.
I studied architecture. I spent 7 years studying architecture. I went to Cornell for undergrad, and then I went to Harvard Graduate School of Design for a master's degree. And after that, I came to Miami for a little bit.
Yeah, you came to Miami. You
yep.
were
I taught
teaching.
At FIU, architecture studio. That was a lot of fun. And after that, I moved back to New York. And when I was in New York, I was just looking... for a place that I could mix a lot of the interest that I have in food with all the skills that I learned as an architecture student. And I look at a lot of places, but I ended up at iCrave because it was one of the ones that offered that possibility of working on a lot of hospitality and restaurants
and it's worked out a bit, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because when I was in undergrad and grad school, I focused a lot on like markets and designing big food-related urban scape projects. And then when I came to iCrave, one of my first projects was designing a food hall and a market, and now that's kind of what I do a lot of. So it's good that I got a place or a platform to develop those ideas.
Because you do, we'll do a little plug here. you do blog about food, and you have like a book out and everything. Tell everybody what the name is.
Yeah, so I've been writing for Tasty Plan for 7 years. Jesus, that's a long time.
It's a long time, yeah.
And then last year, in the beginning of 2017, I published a little guidebook for dinner recipes, and it's a fun 5-week meal plan aimed at helping people cook dinner more often and make it easier for everybody.
Right.
It's a good book.
Yeah, so it's called Cocina, right?
Cocina, yeah. Cocina. It's a play on the Spanish word cocina, but it's spelled phonetically. So it's,
right. No, it's very cool. Very nicely done. Super beautiful photographs that I've always told you that if all fails, you should do photography of food because really they're gorgeous. They really are. Anyway, so tell me what's your background in getting into, well, besides what you told us that you were doing it like part-time at night. So how'd you come up the ranks?
I would say I've kind of been flying by the seat of my pants, to be honest with you.
Is it the University of Hard Knocks? Is that what they call it?
Yeah. Even to go way, way back, I wanted to be an architect in like third grade. I wrote like, there's a journal entry like framed in our office that talks like from my third grade journal about I wanted to be an architect, everything's spelled wrong. And I think once you say something like that as a kid, everybody just assumes that that's what you're going to do. They're sort of like, okay, great, you know, awesome. We don't have to worry about this one.
Yeah.
And they never say, maybe you want to go into finance or maybe you want to be a dentist.
Right.
So no one ever checks and says, hey, are you sure? And so I was looking at like going to RISD, and my best friend went up to Syracuse University and he said there's an architecture program here, and he got accepted there, and I applied as well, and I followed him, and he didn't end up even going to Syracuse. So I just went to Syracuse.
You were there. That's a lot of snow. I'll tell you. You were in Ithaca at Cornell.
Close, very close.
But Syracuse was even more.
Exactly the same.
Wow. I don't know. I went there once.
And then, so I got a degree in architecture, and I came out of school, and even in school, people were like, are you really going to do architecture, or are you going to do something like sort of around branding, or and even back then, like strategy, or just sort of different type of creative concept work. And I went there to a big global brand company called Interbrand, like owned by Omnicom. They're massive. I was a designer, an environmental designer there for a few months, and somebody from there took me, like went to David Yurman, took me there, said, can you do store planning? I was like, I'll try. And then I worked there for 5 years, four or five years, and we went from like one store to 10 stores, and it was just me and like a draftsperson, and we hired great architects and who were kind of in that realm of retail and hospitality. And I would work with them, and it was really kind of fun and exciting. And I went from there to a group in San Francisco, and then Lionel and I were both working for Disney for two different companies, and we kind of reconnected. And he called me when he got the airport projects and was like, I need help. Can you come help? I moved from San Francisco back to New York in like 4 days. And my now wife and I moved back, both started working back at iCrave, and that was 8 years ago.
Oh, so your wife works there too?
She doesn't anymore now.
Oh, not anymore.
Yeah,
okay.
She did for a few years, and then she went to her own.
So where'd you grow up?
Connecticut.
Connecticut.
And I think that's like a big part of me wanting to be an architect was I wanted to go to college, and I come from like a family of builders. So My grandfather was a mason, and I worked with him when I was very young and like in through my teens. And I worked on road construction crews, and I worked for masonry contractors. And my father's in construction. My uncles and all the males.
So it's all like predetermined. Except
in my family.
You're not like that.
No, yeah. I come from a family of
doctors.
Yeah. I'm a black sheep of the family.
Uh-huh. And for me, like that was architecture. So
yeah.
It was building stuff,
right?
And
right.
I build my own furniture, and I have like a dozen pieces or so that are really sort of nice. I have been doing it lately because we're so busy. But it was always
what kind
about the
of
making
furniture
of stuff.
Are you? What materials are you using for the furniture?
Wood, metal.
Wood.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Most it's pretty like mid-century-ish.
That's interesting. One of the last podcasts we just
modernist.
Did was with a friend of mine he's Swedish. He's a woodworker,
mm-hmm.
and he makes. He's doing furniture
mm-hmm.
design also on the side. Beautiful stuff.
In
wood.
I wish I had more time. I wish I had more
yeah.
space.
You can move to Miami.
When I move to Miami.
Right, when
I'll
you,
get one of
you share.
Yeah.
Just go to the beach and
get a warehouse in
yeah.
the little river and go to town. Yeah. So, this your first trip to Miami? Or
No.
No, several
no.
times. You must have been here a few times. You guys have a lot
mm-hmm.
of projects in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So can you like list them? Like, there's a lot of
well,
them.
We
people don't are not aware of that, but
I guess last night
we
last night's experience was a grand tour of the exquisite ikre work
uh-huh.
in Miami. So we went to dinner at Komodo, which funny enough, I was telling Jesse yesterday, it was the first drawing I drew on my first day at ikre was the plan layout for the restaurant. This was in May of 2012.
Oh my God.
Wow.
And we're eating dinner, right?
That's
thank
smack dab
that
in
I
the middle of it.
But that's nice to be able to
yeah.
go back and
yeah.
see how things are holding up and
yeah.
how you know.
So I mean
working.
That yeah, that project took five years, I guess, to open, and because we started a really long time ago and it went through a crazy process, but eventually it finally opened
mm-hmm.
last year and. Last November? No, in 16.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, is that the one that I kind of knew about? That
yeah, it's
you
on
came
Brickle.
Down, right?
Yes,
you
yes.
came down and
yeah.
and talked about it,
yeah.
and then there was trouble and back and forth.
It was
and
one
back
of those very
forth.
Complicated
yeah.
projects.
Yeah, negotiations. Not trouble with the design, but just negotiating
yeah.
back and forth. About
it. It changed hands.
It changed
the ownership.
Oh, yeah,
changed,
right,
yeah.
right.
So after we had dinner there, we went to Live, which we also helped renovate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And yeah. I mean, what else is in here?
What else have we done down here?
There's new stuff, I guess.
There's new stuff coming.
Coming.
Right?
Yeah.
So there's the, I think we just had a meeting about another nightclub that we'll be doing. I worked here looking at like the Wynwood areas with a developer. So
oh,
because we are
yeah.
in the strategy group.
Right.
We help developers do like early planning. So 20-year
okay.
phase plans of
oh, wow.
like, you know, what
urban
the future of neighborhoods might be.
Right.
Now? Yeah.
Too bad you weren't there
yeah.
10 years ago when they needed
no.
some curation.
No.
I mean, it looks to I don't know. Most of the
artists
looked
at like what is this Little River?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like Morningside.
Right.
All of this. Where are we in
oh,
Little
yeah.
Haiti right now?
Where
Where's
are we
this?
Right
Where's this?
Little River.
We're in
Little
River.
Haiti is like a few blocks.
Yeah.
It's
so,
like stops at like 60,
yeah.
62, some 65, and then Little River begins.
Hmm.
They're like right close to each other. Very small niches, but. So is there a plan for this area? Kind of so. Yeah, interesting
you know,
to know.
Like, there's always like a plan.
There's always a plan.
There's always a plan.
There's always a plan.
It's like when that happens.
Yeah.
You know, it's like could be 30.
I mean,
years
Wynwood
now.
Was for from an artist's point of view,
mm-hmm.
we were all pretty upset about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had an alternative space that I founded and directed for 8 years. First, we were in the design district when it was a ghost town.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was a lot of hype about it and everything, but it was basically a ghost town.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they were planning, future planning 20 years down the road. It hasn't really been 20 years, but close.
Mm-hmm.
2004, I opened
mm-hmm.
and was there for 5 years, I think, in the design district, and then I moved down to Wynwood because the prices just kept
yep.
going, skyrocketing in the design district, but still being a ghost town.
Yeah,
it would just skyrocket
what,
anyway. And
that's what happened
like,
in Wynwood.
Well,
and
Wynwood was even worse. So yeah, everybody had migrated to Wynwood, galleries and artists, studios, and I had a gallery, the gallery, the alternative space, and a studio later there. And, you know, then things were just being knocked down really quickly. So we all left.
Yeah,
and everybody was disappointed because they wanted it to stay super creative and you know, high caliber. And it's now just a melting pot of everything.
Right.
You know, there's not a whole lot of...
I really think the only way that that's ever going to happen is, one, you're going to have like, enlightened developers who can, like...
Where do we get those guys?
You know, money talks for those guys.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I think it's, like, enabling artists and architects to become landowners. I think is the biggest thing is, like, all those artists should have got together and bought buildings.
Right.
And that would have been... That's the only way.
Well, I don't think anyone, I mean, some did. Yeah. Some did. And you know, when they have the money, but it's, you know, an artist to buy something, most don't have any money to pay their rent where they live.
Right.
Much less their studio and everything else. It's hard. But one thing that would be interesting, you know, is like, I believe this is true. I heard a lecture on it years ago, so it's probably not even existing anymore. But in Philadelphia, they had a really blighted area where most of the artists are, and some political person there had the wherewithal to, you know, approach the government and talk to them, and they got the developers. They offered them, they made a plan, and they said, because we want to keep this. What's happening here, we want to make it better, but we don't want to destroy it. We don't want all the artists to leave because that's what's bringing the interest here. So what they did to the landowners, the landlords, and everybody that owned the buildings and were renting them, they gave them a tax break for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And they didn't pay any property tax if they were renting to artists or galleries.
Right.
That way they wouldn't have to raise the rent.
Right.
Because they were getting so much off their stuff. So it worked. I don't know how long it worked. I don't know if it was a total disaster.
I think there's a zoning thing like that in New York and Soho, or there was. I know I have some friends that had to apply as artists to get certain lofts and stuff that were kind of rent controlled in Soho, because Soho is all luxury condominiums.
Right,
and,
of course.
There's an effort to preserve the creative community in those neighborhoods.
Right. I wish that could happen here. I mean, it does in little tiny pockets where somebody buys a whole bunch of stuff and then they designate it as.
Yeah.
You know, but they're making good money themselves.
Yeah, we get it. It's interesting because as architects, we're kind of on both sides of that, right? Like, we like developers because developers pay us.
Right.
Developers need to build new buildings. And so we get, that's where
your,
our bread and butter
comes from. Jobs come
from. So like the creative energy is now in a different place there. But at the same time, we hate to like over gentrify or completely obliterate the fabric, the organic neighborhood fabric.
Well,
right.
People go there for that.
Yeah.
And then suddenly it's all gone and it's, you know, Gap and Banana Republic.
Yeah.
I mean, then it's just nothing anymore.
I think like a lot of, especially like the strategy work that we do, is we kind of like do that like balancing. Like,
oh, yeah.
Okay, you are the developer and you want this, but we understand like what's the side of like the artists or like
the community. Why the people are coming now.
This is how you actually build a neighborhood. And it's like the mix of like you have this and you have that. Like you need the right mix of like your tenants that are going to bring the people in, and then the artists that are going to support that network to keep it like a supported, exciting place to be.
I mean, the design district is I don't know what the percentage is, 75% owned by Craig Robbins, who's a big developer. And he goes back and forth because, of course, the spaces they have there, now it's way high-end luxury brands. And you have Fendi and you know, everybody's there.
Mm-hmm.
Rolex, they all have their like flagship stores there because they it's really a loss. I think they're all tax losses, but they're like a PR event for them.
Yes.
They just do the store.
Three-dimensional billboards.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
It's exactly virtual reality, but nobody's buying,
like,
but they're all looking.
Yeah.
And anyway, he still maintains a policy of allowing some artists to be in the mix for really discounted rent, meanwhile, you know, oh, we'll rent for a couple of years because
sure.
it's empty.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And as we go developing, that's like on our,
yeah.
that's on our plan for 5 years from now. So that building is just going to stay like that. So you can go ahead and be in it for
right.
a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, luckily he's done that and that helps a little bit, but it's like 2 or 3 artists. You
sure.
know, there's a lot of artists here that, you know, need places to work. But
yeah.
it's interesting, the whole thing about that. But I feel like that could be another whole 3 podcasts on,
for sure,
you know,
yeah,
gentrification
you could,
and the problems.
Well, you could also look at it, you know, the fact that New York and Miami and Los Angeles have become exorbitantly expensive and the gentrification of all their, even their sort of suburban enclaves where all their creative
yeah.
artists used to be, has pushed development into like North Carolina and Nashville and places
so that's
like
a good
St.
thing.
Louis and Cleveland
yeah, yes.
and Columbus and... So, you know, the small American cities are thriving again because
of that.
Like Detroit is coming back a little bit because
right.
because people are like, we can't be here. We're going to go do this in a, what we like cities.
Right.
And so we're going to go to a different city.
Yeah, I have artist friends who, you know,
yeah.
they maybe some left. I don't know. But I know some that we're talking about. Well,
yeah.
hey, maybe that's the place to go because very
and
very,
like in 20 years it's all going to come crumbling down and everyone
yeah,
will move
and
back
it'll
into
all,
Miami
yeah, it's a
like,
cycle
yeah.
it's a cycle and I get
lose
that
their shirt and...
and it's like people in Miami complain a lot and but that's been going on in New York for
yeah.
years and years and years, you know. Miami's just a baby and growing and
mm-hmm.
we all get very disappointed and hurt that we our whole neighborhood that we loved and everybody came and it got to be so well known and kind of like kind of a classy cultural center because of the artists.
Yeah.
And now
right.
they're all gone. So I don't know how
it keeps
I
think
on
like
going,
part
but.
Of it, you know, you touched on something else that we also often deal with, which is like short-term leases, you know, because architecture is so tied to real estate and how the functions of real estate. Short-term leases and pop-up, for lack of a better term,
right.
pop-up art studios, right, is not something that even existed years ago, but like market format retail and pop-up and short-term leases is everywhere and it's kind of good. It doesn't have the same effect. It's more like pretending to have an artist community there, right? Because you don't get to have the long-term sort of rooted effects of having
right.
someone think that this is their kind of home away from home or their third place.
Right.
You've got somebody who's for a year and a half going to be doing something that's really highly visible and has an opportunity to get it for like, let's say less money or whatever it is. But like it's thought of differently as both that artist or the renter. Right. And then it kind of goes away and something else comes in and we live in a society where you swipe and move through things and consume things much quicker. So like the attention span that both the consumers and the
yeah.
artists are going to have for
that's
a space quick. Like that is just like, it's,
yeah. Well, you have a chance. You have an opportunity
yeah.
for a short while. You just have to let
yeah.
the strategy and the branding
mm-hmm.
have to really be strong, which,
yeah.
you know, that's a really important thing that I'm sure a lot of artists don't even think about. But you have that opportunity. It's true. I think that the pop-ups and,
mm-hmm.
and the experiences that are really temporary but in really key places are amazing. And that's true. Didn't exist before.
It's yeah. so funny when you think about it, too, because it's both a function of real estate and prices and the retail sort of collapse, right.
right?
Bricks and mortar retail collapse, vacant spaces, all these developers holding all this space. What do I do with it? We make pop-up stuff
right.
short term.
Right. There's
I
mean, places in New York called like,
well, there's Canal
No Longer
Street.
Empty
mm-hmm.
is one. And
so
there's another. Yeah.
Is from London.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's pretty, those are pretty amazing. There's a program here too that an artist friend of mine does, but I haven't seen a lot of activity in it, but maybe, you know, it's not, I'm sure it's not easy to orchestrate and
mm-hmm.
all that, but anyway. So where I want to go next, because I know you guys are, we're on a really tight schedule as you're catching a plane. I want to know about the project that's coming.
Okay.
And I know that everybody in our community will be excited to learn about it.
So first of all, Marielle and I are working on all the hotels in one capacity or another at our office, right? There's no hotels that we're not working on.
No.
Okay.
I don't know how I
yeah.
I ended
so
up.
So you're in everything. Oh boy.
I like it. It's a fun
yeah,
one.
Yeah.
Oh, it's the best one.
It's the best book right now.
Oh, the hotels are by far the great thing about hotels is that you get to deal with people when they're at their best. They're like your most imaginary self comes out when you're at a hotel. Right.
Yeah.
So you're
yeah.
either on your honeymoon or you're like a cool
well,
business traveler.
The title of our episode
mm-hmm.
is called Sleeping with Art.
Okay.
And I have to say that when I've traveled, I enjoy like places that are really creative looking, you know, and the feel is creative, and they actually, you know, some of them even really have original art on the walls, and they have art programs, and it's just like, it really does change the way you feel.
Yeah.
And it's like you said,
you're so open.
It's like an opportunity to be somebody else.
Yeah, and it's an opportunity
your
to
best
explore.
Version. Like, this is better than your apartment. This place is decorated nicer than your house. You're like having an affair, having a relationship, like you're in love.
You're
a cool business traveler.
It's an adventure.
Like,
no matter what, across the board, it's kind of like I'm on an adventure and I want to experience. And I think that if you can have like a visual or, you know, a visual entity, you know, that's an added experience.
Sure.
Just in the room when you're alone. Something you're staring at, or a mural on the wall, or whatever.
I mean,
Chambers Hotel in New York, all the elevators have sound art inside of them. And I mean, that's just like, that just, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's expected a lot more from clients, right, or from customers. It's a lot easier for us because of sort of social media and Instagram and the internet. It's easier for designers like us to find artists. When before I live in Chelsea, and you used to go around to all the galleries and kind of would get inspired, but you never could really, it was harder for you to sort of match up an art vision for the hotel unless you had an art expert sort of brought in.
Right.
And somebody who knew everybody.
Right.
And then if you wanted to do local, right, you need somebody in the scene,
right?
You need
someone there, right.
Now,
hey, I'm here for Miami.
Right, but now we still tend to hire people who know, who are in the scene, because we want more emerging artists typically. But early on in the process, like right now, we're able to sort of envision and do some research really easily, and at least put in art that we can find that is of the language or genre that we want to.
You have a theme or something,
It's very subjective, and I think like because we're talented designers and we know the kind of spaces we would want to be in and the art we would want to see.
So when you see it, you know it.
Kind of like, this would be perfect for right there. Right. And it's just much like a person would for their own home, for us.
Right.
And I think that's that added touch that if you're a guest coming to a hotel and you can tell that the designer or the hotelier or whoever looked at, like, put a piece there intentionally. It's not just some sort of like corporate Getty Image art thing, you know, like at a chain hotel.
Right.
It's like, so they really liked this piece and it's perfect for right here. And it's that added layer of connection that you get to have as a guest.
I mean, no, I feel like the art does almost like a lot of the talking in a hotel. Like the design has like a lot of say in what the feel and the look is.
But it's back to that orchestration.
Exactly.
You know, you can put it in, but you can't just stick a piece on the wall.
What's your voice and what is it that you want to say?
Right.
And I think right now, because we're working on so many different hotels, it's very interesting to see like what our strategy for art is in a hotel in New York versus one in Amsterdam
or Puerto Rico
that's opening now this year, or in Miami. And it's all very different. And the one in New York is very Soho and edgy and like, you know.
Right. I wonder what Miami would be. Those words like edgy and raw. What's Miami to you guys?
Yeah.
Everybody wants to do murals. Because of the whole thing.
Yeah.
The whole Wynwood thing.
Yeah, the Wynwood.
And in this hotel, like, when we started this project, because it's like a historic deco building, so we're not allowed to do a lot of stuff, we are trying not to do any murals.
Right.
Because we know that everybody who's trying to make a youthful, like, millennial hotel is throwing murals up at
like,
and
so
I,
tired.
And I hate to say, like, I did it in Amsterdam, and I did it in San Puerto Rico with some great artists, like, local artists there, and local artists in Netherlands. But...
It's
really impactful.
In Miami, in Miami, you know, it would be like, oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I think.
So you guys really got to kind of like.
Yeah. I think for this.
Go somewhere else. Like.
For this project in particular, we're kind of having a little bit of fun of incorporating art into the design, and it's kind of more part of the whole strategy of the project. So it's like. Instead of thinking of it, it's something that you hang on the wall or something you paint on the wall. It's
like
doorknobs. How is it part of...
Exactly.
Yeah. That's interesting.
So, like, you know, we just came out of a thing and we have this idea that we'd love to have an artist do the mosaic in the pool. right?
Yeah,
so that
right. Cool.
The piece of art is the pool.
Right.
So if we're going to do a mosaic pool bottom anyway, why not just make an artist do it? And I think when you're a designer, I'm coming off of Puerto Rico where I have mural artists doing work there. I have to unplug myself from the process because we don't want it to be decor. I want it to be.
Thank God you said that.
The artist's work.
I love that.
And it's with really young artists, it's particularly difficult because we're so critical of our own work and like, well, what's the story and what's the voice and what are you thinking about when you're here? And especially like mural artists who really are really reactionary and they're kind of
more
intuitive with their
improvised.
Paint. Improvised, right?
Yeah.
So they're like, I don't know, I just thought it would look cool to do the thing. And I'm like, okay, you know, but we want to like have a conversation about this piece. I don't want it to just be wall covering.
I mean, I think that's also a nature of coming from architecture education, which is very critical and very like...
They make
brain
you feel
driven.
But there's a lot of artists that well, I know that the mural artists are it's a different breed, but there's so many artists that are, you know, totally everything is conceptual in Miami. It's just like if you're not a little bit conceptual,
mm-hmm.
if you don't have like a direction, a place where you want to go with what you're expression means to people,
mm-hmm.
then it's just like you're just not serious. You know, it's like never mind. You know,
right.
So you kind of like work in a certain area, doing certain things. It's not always really obvious because obviously, you know, some intellectual thought is not that obvious if you're not speaking to the artist
right.
in the moment or reading a text about the artwork. But I love that. I love the direction that you
mm-hmm.
guys are talking about. It's like, I'm actually very, really super impressed because I'm used to like art in public places that has, you know, they have this term that I heard the other night that I really didn't like very much, but it shows the direction of what a lot of outdoor big public art that's gonna, not that you're having public art, but it is boils
mm-hmm.
down to that. They called it plop art.
Oh man!
Oh,
what?
I was like, what? I mean, because they plop it down.
Oh god!
And they would say, "Oh,
we just bring it with a crane and just like."
Yeah, it's a big sculpture, and they plop it down, and that was derogatory. And I felt like, what?
We should not say that ever again.
Oh god, that was just the worst thing I had ever heard that someone would call art plop art.
I mean, even drop art is better than plop art.
Yeah. Well, yes, I agree. But I mean, if you have a building or you have a train station or whatever. And you get an artist to design a gate or a windbreak, which is made out of glass or something. But it doesn't have to be decorative, like you said. It can still have a function, but still have the integrity of that artist's work. You know, I feel like most of our public art has become, you know, like, yeah, do some decorative doorknobs.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be too, you know, don't get too edgy. People won't understand.
I mean, unfortunately
and,
for us,
oh my God.
We like to push the boundaries always.
Yeah, that's
and
the
make
whole
everybody
thing.
Uncomfortable.
But otherwise, it's not art. I don't understand, you know. If it's just pretty, then, you
we
know.
We use, like, three terms that are better than plop art in all of our strategy decks. When we talk about kind of neighborhoods and like, big urban campuses and things like that, you have totems, you have follies, and then you have like apparatus. So you get totems are like these symbolic things that you kind of, you know, like you look at them.
Right.
Follies are like
whimsical.
Often like you interact with it a lot more, meaning you like walk through it or you know,
right.
But
it's more
it's
like
kind
a space
of
you
inconsequential
inhabit.
As well. It's
yeah.
you're in there for the art.
Right.
And then an apparatus would be like a bus stop, but that's an art piece.
Right.
So it's actually it is a thing. You're using it for
it's
a thing.
There.
It's
right.
has a practical function. But it's not what a bus stop was.
Right.
You know, it's
right.
amazing.
It changes your
tense up something.
Yeah. Interesting.
It's all better than plop art. You guys can take those.
Oh my God, that word! I didn't say that word. That was some. So
yeah.
I don't. You know, I'm trying to think who was it that just
too.
Said that. Like they said, oh my God, we're not going to deal with plop art here. And I went, plop art? Oh my God. Anyway,
oh,
yeah. So tell me this. Hotel is near the Bass Museum, right? So it's in a great location.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's an offshore hotel, so it's not on the beach. It's on Collins.
It's across the street from some big hotels.
On the
right?
west side of Collins.
Right. I mean, the location is amazing.
Yeah.
And you know that we've had a couple of art hotels
mm-hmm.
in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
There's one that was like everybody had a love affair with that hotel for many, many years. And when Art Basel came to town, people would just fight for the invitation because they had.
Renata used to be? Or no?
No, this was, they had their own Art Basel plan.
Uh-huh.
And they had a brunch every Saturday of Art Basel that became like something that was like, you know, consecrated. Everybody
right.
went there, and it was, they were very generous, and everybody knew the owners were collectors, and they
mm-hmm.
had really beautiful art. And that kind of disappeared
mm-hmm.
a couple of years ago. So we're waiting for the next big art thing that the artist can, you know, can get involved with Art Basel. I guess you guys have to maybe suggest in strategy and branding.
Well, I mean,
that
it's
they
something
need to do that.
Actually that the client, because we were in meetings all day yesterday, brought up a lot. It's like, what is, like, how do you design a place that has the flexibility of completely transforming for events like this? Especially
mm-hmm.
because it's in Miami. That's such a big week for, I mean, Miami and the world. It's like, how do you make a hotel that has that ability to, like, kind of like absorb all the potential of Art Basel
right.
and become like a.
It's very competitive. There are.
I know Faina is doing an awesome
Faina
job.
Faina does an
yeah.
awesome job and brings art from all anywhere in the world, not all over the world, but anywhere in the world. They hunt down. I don't know how they curate that, but they did. I was blown away.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not easily blown away. There's like very little art I even like. But that, I was intrigued by it because it was a Dutch partnership called Studio Drift
mm-hmm.
Yes.
to young
mm-hmm.
Dutch people. And they did 300 drones, flew over this one area near the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
They were lit up like a swarming group of birds.
Oh,
it's very
okay.
beautiful.
In the middle of, in the night. So it was all,
it was over
it
the
was
ocean.
Just
yeah.
so beautiful. I mean, it was like a dream world. I was transported. It was really amazing.
Cool.
I have
to go
to say.
Burning Man.
And then, yeah, I know that was like something that would probably be there or they've been there. Who knows? But yeah, there's a lot of things like that. Big installations, another group of people from Switzerland, big sponsors of Art Basel. That are the watch brand, the Audemars Piguet, do every year. They commission some artists to do something in the city somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And they, it's usually down there by the hotels. And the last one I saw this year was outstanding also on the beach. Big installation. I mean, big money went into that. They had, I mean, it was, you know, moving. It was had a lake they made of their own. It was like right by the water, so at night the sunset would come in, and
cool.
it was like amazing.
We should come down
more
when we
you
get
yeah,
when
you
we
should.
Get closer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's also just a construction schedule, and you know,
right,
we start
right.
approaching people 6 months to 8 months before you are going to open, right?
Right.
To make sure you're kind of got fresh artists, fresh
right.
work. But like ahead of that, doing research and like and seeing some of these like happenings.
Yeah, you need
really
to come during Basel and like just check
yeah.
out the not so much
year.
The main fair.
I used to come every year, and now I have
year.
A daughter who was born on December 5th, and
oh.
we took her for her 1 year birthday, and there's too many people now.
It's just crazy. Yeah,
it's a nightmare.
You have to come with a plan that like, you know, I go to the main fair for
yeah.
2 or 3 hours one day, and I never go back because there's so many interesting outside projects
mm-hmm.
yeah.
that I find much more interesting than the regular old galleries from Europe. So just going to those things
it's one of those things. It's like a double-edged sword there, because you know you have a tremendous amount of people who would not otherwise even be interested, because it's such a cultural happening now, not just an art show. You have
right.
people who wouldn't otherwise be exposed to art and
yeah.
artists getting exposed to it and taking selfies in front of it. And
yeah.
like it, at the same time, I'm annoyed by it because
like
now I'm in
words.
Like a Disney World
yeah.
like line
yes.
just to get in and out
but,
of things.
But
I want
yeah.
to consume as much as possible because I have like intention
right.
to like glean from it, learn from it,
right.
and incorporate
it. It's hard. It's very hard.
Yeah.
yeah. I mean, you have to... I've done it every year since 2001,
mm-hmm.
and I've been involved in it. And
do you remember when I made cupcakes for?
Oh my God! Yes, we were in
it
Pulse Fair,
so
and we
good.
Made
What's
cupcakes
this?
As an art
when
kind
I lived,
of thing.
When I lived in here for Pulse Fair for Art Basel.
Yeah, we
she
collaborated
had,
on. We
had.
I was
yeah.
I was curating a booth for your Art Center South Florida, and because they Pulse Fair gives a booth to a nonprofit every year for free. So I curated that, and I asked Mariela to
make art
cupcakes.
It was 2011, so cupcakes were still
they were big.
Trendy.
Yeah, it doesn't sound so great now, but
and
they were trendy there.
They were really good.
They were very good.
The green tea one was
my favorite.
Were
they like kale cupcakes?
No. They were, yeah, well.
No, there was a green tea.
Themes.
Yeah, they all had themes. They were really beautiful.
Was it, you had a matcha cupcake?
No.
No.
Yeah, well,
matcha wasn't that big.
No, but I had a green tea with a gold leaf.
Yes, green tea with
really
gold leaf. It was
so
amazing. And we even have pictures. I have pictures. Yeah. I can put that on the podcast. I have a space where we're going to put links for everything.
We sold
so we'll
them
have
all
links.
Out.
We sold them all out. They were amazing.
They were great.
So I think we kind of covered everything because you almost have to kind of leave in 2 minutes to go out to the airport. But I hope that we see you again.
Yeah.
And I hope that yeah.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward
I'm
to
looking
seeing what
for
kinda like
where my desk will go in this studio.
I think we can build you a little mezzanine, Jesse.
Yeah.
Yeah, we thought about it a lot actually. Like down here.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Oh really?
I'll be a snowbird. I'll come in the winter months.
Mm-hmm. It's that problem with as a design firm having okay, how many people do you need? In a studio, if you had an office here, 5, 10, you know, it's like. It's
like having nice. A branch, like
if
having
we had
a little.
200,
like yeah,
office.
Not everybody,
people,
just a little
you
office.
Put a 15
yeah.
person, it's like you have enough business that's feeding a 200 person machine to really easily break a 15 person studio and put it in the next
right.
city. It's like you have to kind of get over a hump.
Right. No, I know. I get that.
Yeah.
Well, it's you know, well, Miami's always still got neighborhoods that
yeah.
are going to be. Suddenly, it's here.
Yeah.
You know, and then
definitely
cheaper
always,
rent and
always work to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that we're done. I need to take a little picture of you two guys.
Like this?
Yes.
We've been out all night. We were out
I know.
All night.
Well, but we'll take a bunch, and you guys decide
okay.
which one you like the best. And anyway, before we sign off, thank you very much for coming. It's really cool. I think that this is really interesting.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Awesome.
We'll keep in touch. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, I'd just like to add a short postscript here. There's been a really cool development since we recorded the session. We heard there's a possibility we might be seeing some work of our friend and local artist, Lauren Shapiro, installed on site in this new project. Lauren will also be coming up on episode 11, so you don't want to miss it. And once again, thanks to everyone for tuning in. I think you'll agree our guests make great company. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Art and Company is recorded in the studio of artist Alette Simmons Jimenez, that's me, located just north of downtown Miami, where I record, edit, and produce all the episodes. Images, links, and more details on our guests from this episode and all others can be found on our webpage, artandcompanypodcast.com. You can also find us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere you get your podcasts. Make sure you rate us on iTunes and let us know what you think of the podcast. And of course, subscribe to make tuning into our next episode easy.